Greetings. In this, our final podcast of pre-Pesach 2008, getting ready for the Haggadah, I would like to take a look at the core text of the Haggadah and take a look at it from several angles. As the Mishnah records in Masachet Pesachim Perek Yod, that the order of the Seder is, first you have the first cup, and then immediately afterwards you have a second cup, and Kan HaBen Shoel Aviv. At this point, the son asks his father. And then if you read the Mishnah very carefully, you'll find something interesting. Vim Ein Adat BaBen Aviv Melamdo Manishtana Laylazim Mikol Alelot. If the son does not know how to ask a question, then father guides him and teaches him how to ask, and then we have the Nusach of Manishtana with the four explications of the question, one of which has been switched Bizman Azev from Tzli to Mesubin. And immediately after that, the Mishnah establishes two rules. Ulefi da'ato shel ben aviv malamdo, you have to teach the son, you answer the son based on his own understanding, and that is something which is rooted in something we discussed in an earlier podcast of the four parsha of the four sons. And then metchil b'gnut u'mesayim b'shavach, you have to start the story with the disgrace and end with the praise. And then, meaning another piece of the puzzle, is doresh me'arami oved avi ad shegomer kol ha'parsha. You begin discussing, expounding, analyzing the passage known as Arami Oved Avi, which we'll talk about forthwith, until you finish the entire parsha. And that is the mitzvah of Haggadah. The next Mishnah is already Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer Kol Shelo Amar Shlosha Dvarim Elu B'Pesach Lo Yetzei Idei Chovato, from to Becholdo Vador, to Lefichach, to Halo, to Birchat Geula. So the ending piece of what we call Magid, the section we call Magid, is laid out nearly verbatim for us and in totem in the Mishnah. However, the section which makes up the bulk of what we call Magid is presented in a skeletal form. The second cup is poured, the son asks a question. If he doesn't know how to ask a question, father guides him. And then you answer the son according to his understanding in the order of Gnut to Shavach, and you use the four verses in Dvarim Chavav, Dvarim 26, verses 5 through 8, in order to tell the story. Now, what are those verses? So first of all, let's take a look at the context. The context of those verses is the mitzvah of Hava'at Bikurim and Mikra Bikurim, that they were commanded that when we come to Eretz Yisrael and we settle in the land and we have fruit, which halachically is one of the seven species, when we harvest it, and it's sometime in the summer, that's the halacha, after Shavuot, anytime until Chanukah, we bring these first fruits up to the place that God chooses to have his name sit, as it were, or reside, which of course becomes the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. You bring a basket with the fruit, and you bring it to the Kohen, and you say, Higadati ayom l'Adonai l'vacha, kivati al ha'aretz ha'shenishpa Adonai l'avotenu latet lanu. I declare before God that I've come to the land that God promised. The Kohen takes the basket, and you lift it up together, and then you recite the following. V'anita v'yamarta l'fnei Adonai l'vacha. This is what you must declare before God. And the halacha, the Mishnah in Masechet Sotah, tells us you have to say this in the original Lashon HaKodesh. And the phrasing is, Arami Oved Avi, Vayard Mitzrayma Vayagor Sham Temeat, V'Yisham Negoi Gadol Atzum Barav. That's Pasuk Hey, or the rest, the quote part from Pasuk Hey, which is, my father was a wandering Arami, that's almost assuredly a reference to Yaakov, but might be a reference to Avraham. Look at the Rishonim there, the Mefarshim there in Tvarim, it's Machloket, but most of them agree it's Yaakov. My father was a wandering Aramean. He went down to Egypt with a small group, and he became there a great and mighty and numerous nation. The next pasuk is, Vayareu otanu hamitzrim vayya'anunu vayitnu alenu avodah kasha. The Egyptians dealt badly with us, and they oppressed us, and they gave us hard work. Third pasuk, pasuk Zion, Vayitzak el Adonai Elohei Avotenu, we called out to Hashem, the God of our fathers, Vayishma Adonai Kolenu, God heard our voices, Vayaret Onenu Vatamalenu Vatlachatzenu, he saw our oppression and our hard work and our difficulties. And the next pasuk, Vayotzeenu Adonai Mitzrayim V'yad Chazaka U'mishmu V'zron Tuyav Mor Gadol U'Votot U'Movtim. And God took us out of Egypt with a strong hand and an outstretched arm, and with great fear, and with signs and with wonders. Those are the psukim. Now the next pasuk, pasuk tet, is Vayivienu al HaMakom Hazeh, he brought us to this place. That's something that does not, at least formally and explicitly, play a role in the evening, because the evening is about Yitzhiat Mitzrayim, not about anything beyond that, at least not formally. That is the Parsha of Armiya Oved Avi. So we have one obvious question that everybody asks, which is, why is this the piece that's the core of the Haggadah? Would it not make far more sense for us to focus on the book of Shemot and read the first 15 chapters of the book of Shemot straight out of the text, read through the story from the descent to the slavery and to the oppression and to Moshe being called and to his interactions with Paro and to the Makot, Yitziat Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yam Suf, etc. It would be perfect. Why do we instead take these four psukim from Dvarim? There are several answers that have been given. There's a historic answer which fits in with the last podcast we had, which is that in the Pascha that the Christians would celebrate, they actually would read the narrative from Exodus. And so we want to move away from that, besides the fact that Moshe is highlighted in the narrative in Exodus, and for all sorts of reasons we want Moshe to be omitted as the central figure in the story. There is another reason Rabbi Soloveitchik suggests, a beautiful reason, in which he points out that the point of this evening is not purely narrative. The point of this evening is Thanksgiving. L'fichach anachu chayvim, we spoke about that in one of the earlier podcasts. And as such, the only context in the Torah where the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim is told within the context of a Thanksgiving ceremony is Mikra Bikurim. And therefore, the Torah, therefore Chazal selected those verses as being the core of the Haggadah. So that instead of it being just passing information on, which is what Sefer Shemot is, it's done within the context of Thanksgiving. I'd like to suggest another way to look at it, which takes nothing away from either of those explanations, but perhaps will give us a better sense not only of what the purpose of Armiya Oved Avi and its centrality is, but also of several odd passages that preface and that augment or are found at the end as an epilogue to the Armiya Oved Avi, which really puts the entire Haggadah structurally into perspective. So let's begin with the beginning. Immediately after we make Kiddush, we'll walk through the structure of the Seder. Immediately after we make Kiddush, the very next thing we do, although we announce Rachza and Karpas and Yachatz, the very next thing we do is we start telling the story. And as we studied in the Parsha of the Four Sons, the Torah tells us that when you have a child who doesn't ask a question, you got to tell him the story. Tell him in a simple way with symbols. When you have a child who asks a simple question, that's even better. And so you give him a simple answer. When you ask a child who asks a needling, sarcastic, deprecative kind of question, you don't answer him. You answer past him. You make declarations, but you do not talk to him. And that's what one we call the Rasha. And then when you have a sophisticated child, so you answer with sophisticated answers. As such, there are three types of children, quote-unquote, that we are going to be addressing during the evening. And so the very first thing that we do after Kiddush is we do some strange things. The reason for the strange things is to provoke the curiosity of one particular child. The one that we call She'eino Yodei Lishol isn't going to be provoked. He doesn't ask questions. The one who's a Chacham doesn't need this sort of thing. He's naturally curious. He's thinking in a sophisticated manner, and he's very interested in the discussion that's going on. But it's the one that we call Tam, that may be a wide age range and a wide range of background, who will not naturally ask the question, but if he notices strange things happening at something that attracts his attention, in other words, foodstuffs, and that's why all of the strange customs that we have at the beginning of the Seder are around food, dipping and breaking, etc., then hopefully that will evoke a question and provoke a question from him. We'll say, what's going on? Mazot. And then we can give him a simple answer. So we start off immediately by doing the strange things. The Gemara tells us the reason for Karpas is Latmia Tatinokot, to have the kids be surprised. The reason for Yachatz, which is a very late, fairly late custom, it's clear that many of the Rishonim had a matzah and a half or two matzahs and a half brought to the table. They didn't have three matzahs and then break one or two matzahs and then break one, but rather they had them brought out that way. But this custom of Yachatz, as I mentioned, a relatively late custom, so that starts with some of the Rishonim, is there again to make the children curious. Immediately after doing that, we give a simple declaration that will at least get the core parameters of the story over to somebody who's not going to ask the question, and we do it in the vernacular, and that's why we say halachmanya in the Aramaic. It probably should be done in English or Farsi or Spanish or whatever the language of the people around the table, especially the less educated and the younger people around the table. And so that's what we have to do at the beginning. Immediately after that, we got our second kid who's been waiting with this strange things he's been seeing, who says, what's going on here? Why are you guys leaning? Why are we dipping stuff? Whatever it is that provokes him. At that point, he asks the question. We encourage the question. If he doesn't know how to formulate the question, then we guide him. And then we give him the simple answer that is appropriate for him, which is, that's it. And then we start talking about abstractions. If God hadn't taken us out, where would we be today? And it's important for us to tell the story, and it's so important that no matter how great you are, you have to tell the story. And here's five Chachamim in Bnei Brak, who stayed up all night, and Rabbi Lazman Azariah lobbied for having this, some mention of Mitzrayim be every night. And then the discussion about how to teach. Now, truth to tell, all of those passages are not really part of Haggadah in the formal sense of telling the story. They're part of the text of the Haggadah, but they really are sort of a teacher's guide of saying, here's an example of the five greatest Chachamim in the generation after the Churban, and they spent the whole night telling the story of Mitzrayim. And here is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah lobbying for the Parsha of Tzitzit being read every night so we can mention Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And here is how the Torah teaches us how to teach. And so we go through that. And that takes us, that's really an introductory piece, which takes us all the way to the passage that we refer to as Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avotenu. Now, these three paragraphs I'd like to spend a little time on. Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avotenu is famously one of the two expressions of Matchil Bignut Masayim B'Shevach. We begin the story by talking about the disgrace, and as per the opinion of Rav, mentioned in Masechet Psachim, the Gnut that we're supposed to tell is the Gnut of Avodah Zarah, that we were originally idol worshippers, and God brought us close to his worship. And therefore we tell that story. But the problem is that that doesn't fully explain this paragraph, because first of all, if that were the case, we would say, I have this proof text from Yoshua, and that would be the end of it. The next two paragraphs don't seem to fit that. The second question is, since the chief focus of the story tonight is about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, would it not be far more efficacious to tell the story about the idolatry, which is mentioned in many, many midrashim, of our behavior in Mitzrayim, halalu of avodah zarah, halalu of avodah zarah, mishchu yidechem avodah zarah, all the famous drashot, and say Bnei Israel were of avodah zarah, and within 49 days, here they were at Har Sinai. That's much more of a kervanu makom, and it hits on the same people. But there's a different reason that we're telling the story also. It does suffice to Rav's demand of gnut teshavach about avodah zarah, but it does something else also, which then explains the next two paragraphs. So let's look at the next two paragraphs and give the explanation. Baruch Shem Rav Tachato Yisrael Baruch Hu. What's that? We're thanking God for keeping his promise. Shakurash Baruch Hu, and in the Nusach of the Rambam and the Shibbol Alek and many other Rishonim, Shakurash Baruch Hu Mechashev Etaketz, Hakurash Baruch Hu is always calculating the end in order to fulfill the Brit with Avram Avinu. Now notice we quote two out of the four Psukim of Brit Ben Avatarim. You should know your kids are going to be foreigners in a strange land, and they're going to be oppressed for 400 years. But there are two more psukim. Those two are not mentioned here. The two that are mentioned here is, you should know your kids are going to be foreigners in a strange land, and they'll be worked and worshipped and oppressed for 400 years, which is Bible talk for a really long time. And then, I will judge the nation that oppressed them, and they will go out with great wealth. And this is the promise given to Avraham. And then, we pick up a coast, because this is Shevach, and we say, that is the Brit, meaning the Brit has stood for our ancestors, because not only one time did this happen, but rather in every generation, they try to destroy us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us, and then we immediately begin with the Drasha of Aramir Ovid Avi. So one more point to look at the beginning of the Drasha of Aramir Ovid Avi, and the question to ask, and then we'll put it all together. Arami Oved Avi should start with the descent to Egypt, which is the second drasha. Vayered Mitzrayim Ma'anus al pi adibur. How did Lavan get into the picture here? So there's lots of beautiful drashot of what Lavan is doing here. But simple pshat, why is Lavan here in this text? Lavan tried to destroy all of Yaakov, whereas Paro only tried to destroy the kids, Lavan is worse, etc. What is he doing here? So some of the Rishonim point out that the mention of Lavan here is to substantiate the previous paragraph and the previous paragraph to that. What did we say in the second of these three paragraphs, these three introductory paragraphs, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always calculating the end to fulfill the Brit Ben HaBetarim? What is the Brit Ben HaBetarim? Did God say to Avraham, you should know that one time in history, your kids are going to be oppressed in a foreign land, and they're going to be worked very hard for a long time, and then I'm going to judge the nation, I'm going to bring them out with great wealth? That he did that once? Well, the Nusach of Mechashev HaTaketz makes it sound, no, that's the pattern of Jewish history as given to Avraham by God at Brit Ben HaBetarim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avraham, this is what your children's history will look like. Descent into exile, oppression, divine interaction and intervention, and exodus. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always looking for ways to move that end along in every exile. And many of the Rishonim point out, Mechashev HaTaketz, meaning now in our exile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to find ways to move it along and move us out of it. If that's the case, then we understand the role of Vehisha Amda. But we also understand something else. We understand why Mitchila of the Avodah Zarah didn't go to the Jews in Egypt worshipping idols, but rather went all the way back to Avraham, because what we really want to do is tell a story about all of Jewish history, which starts with Avraham. And therefore we start with Avraham being taken by God and walking him through Eretz Canaan. And then once we've established the connection with Avraham, we say, and Avraham was given a brit. And that brit is a pattern of Jewish history. And that pattern of Jewish history, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always keeping an eye on and always trying to move along to the good side of it, has always stood for us that in every generation they try to destroy us, but there's a brit, and therefore we come out victorious. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us. And therefore, the first character that we encounter in our story is not Paro, but is Lavan. Because Lavan is the first example of that pattern of Jewish history. After all, Yaakov went down to Haran, or went out to Haran, in a stranger in a foreign land. He worked very hard for a long time. God judged the one who was oppressing him, that was Lavan, and Yaakov left with great wealth. This is something Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out years ago, that Brit Ben HaBetarim first was fulfilled with Yaakov, and Yaakov had every reason to perhaps to believe that that was it, that was the completion. And I wrote about that in my book also. The reason Lavan is mentioned here is to show that the story of Brit Ben HaBetarim is not a one-time story. Rather, it is an ongoing story of Jewish history, and that's why the Vehisha Amda is so powerful. Then, what do we do immediately afterwards? We then tell the story from our Arami Oved Avi. Why do we pick our Arami Oved Avi, the first question that I asked? Because if you look at the passage of our Arami Oved Avi, besides the fact of the concern about staying away from the narrative of Shemot, and besides Rabbi Soloveitchik's point, which is very valuable, about using Thanksgiving, a Thanksgiving text. There's another piece to the puzzle. Arami Oved Avi establishes a template. It has four psukim. The first pasuk, Arami Oved Avi Vayered Mitzrayim Vayosham Demad Vayosham Gogadol Atzum Barav, if we were to give it a one-word title, would be Galut, going into exile. The next one, Vayare Otanu Mitzrayim Vayanunu Vaynu Aleinu Avodah Kasha, a one-word title, Avdut, slavery. The next one, Vayitzakal Adonai Vayavotenu Mashma Adonai Kolenu Vayar Tanyenu Tamalenu Vatlachatzenu, a one-word title, Tfilah, prayer. And the last one, Vayotzienu Adonai Mitzvah Miyar Chazakav Zontiyav V'mohar Gadol V'tot Moftim, has a one-word title, Ge'ula. And as such, you have all four basic components of Brit Ben HaBetarim that played out in Mitzrayim being expressed in each one of these four psukim. And therefore, these are the four psukim we want to tell, because we don't want to tell a story at the Seder about an event that happened one time in history, there, then, to them. But rather, we want to tell a story about ongoing Jewish history that also is happening to us right here and now. And therefore, those four psukim are selected, and they're prefaced with a statement that says, don't think that the story we're going to tell is a one-time story. It's an ongoing story. And therefore, when we study it, we should think about what pieces of that story have we seen in our recent history. What pieces of this story are we still looking for? Where do we see the Vanitzak Hashem Elokeinu Avoteinu? Where do we see Vayaraton Yenu Atamaleinu? Is the establishment of a sovereign state of Israel 3 years after the worst disaster we ever encountered? Example of Vayaraton Yenu? We don't have prophets today. We don't know, but we could argue it. And that's what the discussion should be about. So in any case, that is where we go with the four psukim. The four psukim are the template of Jewish history. And then, what about the passages afterwards? And it's important to note that in early Haggadot, the Haggadah of Sadia and the Haggadah of the Rambam, immediately after you finish the drasha of Armi Oved Avi, which concludes with the Eser Makot. After all, Eser Makot, how do you know there's 10 Makot? How do you know there's 10 plagues? Because we have a bunch of children's songs that say 10 plagues? We don't know that there's 10 plagues. If you look through the Torah, you could count 12 plagues, you count 15 plagues, you might count 8 plagues, and Tehillim Ayin Chet, there's 7 plagues. Maybe there's only one plague, Makat Bechorot. How do you know there's 10? It's based on a drasha. And what's the drasha? Davar Acher, Biyad Chazakah, Shtayim. Biyad Chazakah is two words. Rizoran Tuya, Shtayim. Uvmar Agadol, Shtayim. Each one of those are two words. Otot is a plural word, there's two. Uvmoftim, there's another plural word. So there you've got Elu, Esa Makot, Shavia Kodesh Baruch Hol Mitzim Mitzrayim, Ve'eluhain, Dam Tzvardeh, etc. That's really the end of the drasha. And in the early Haggadot, at that point, we went straight to Rabban Gamliel. As the Mishnah says, you expand on Arami Oved Avi, and when you're done, you go to Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel Omer, Kol Shlomar Shlosha Dvarim Pesach, Lo Yitzadei Chovato. What happened is there were passages from some early Midrashim with Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Akiva expanding on the expounding of that Parsha, saying, now that at the end of the drasha we've got to Esser Makot, we're going to demonstrate that there were five times as many Makot by the Yam. That's Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And then Rabbi Eliezer says, yes, and in addition, there were four Makot for each Makan Mitzrayim, so there are really 40 Makot, not 10. And therefore 200 at the sea. And Rabbi Yakiva says, I'll take the same Pasuk in Tehillim Ayin Chet Mem Tet, and find five statements of God's anger for each Makah, and therefore each Makah, instead of being four Makot, is five Makot, which means there weren't 10 Makot Mitzrayim, there are 50. And if there's five times as many at the sea, there's 250. Now, what the purpose of this drasha is beyond the scope of this podcast. But what the effect of the drasha is very powerful. Because something very surprising happens if you take a look at the drasha of Armi Oved Avi. If we take those paragraphs out and read the Haggadah like the Rambam has it, then at no point in the Haggadah do we get out of Egypt. Strange thing, but take a look. The story of Armi Oved Avi ends with Vayotzienu Hashem Mitzrayim, Vayotzienu. Lo Ayde Malach, Lo Ayde Saraf, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bachvodo, Vatzmo comes through, and Makat Pachorot. Biyar Chazakah is one plague. Zoran Tuyah is another plague. Mor Gadol is Gidui Shechina. Botot, Zamateh, Uvmoftim, Zahadam, everything in Egypt. And then Davar Acher is the Esser Makot. At the end of the Esser Makot, where are we? Sitting in our houses in Egypt, eating Korban Pesach. We're not out yet. Suddenly, these three paragraphs, which were from an old Midrash, and do show up in Sadia's Haggadah as additional things to say if you're interested. But not as part of the Haggadah, leapfrog us from Mitzrayim to the other side of Yam Suf. Because suddenly we're comparing what happened in Mitzrayim to what happened at Yam Suf. Beautiful. And that takes us to Dayenu, which we talked about in the last podcast within the context of polemics. Dayenu leapfrogs us even further. It takes us from Mitzrayim to Yam Suf all the way to where the evening really should end, which is in Yerushalayim, eating Korban Pesach, Beit HaMikdash is built, and all is good. So the effect of these five paragraphs, Rabbi Yosef Glili, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva, and then Kama Ma'alot Tovot, and then Alachat Kama V'chama, which again are later additions to the formal Haggadah, effectively take the drasha of Armi Oved Avi and do exactly what the Mishnah said you're supposed to do. Kol Hamar B'Harezim Meshubach. Doresh Me'Armi Oved Avi Achigomer Kol HaParsha. You have to expound. But expounding means you don't just read the text. You discuss it more and analyze it more and apply it contemporary and expand upon it. So those three paragraphs, which are expansions on the Esser Makot, and then the Dayenu, the two paragraphs of Dayenu, which are simply continuing the leapfrog all the way to Eretz Yisrael, are simply more of the drasha of Armi Oved Avi. As such, what we have here in the Haggadah is a fairly simple structure. We start with Kiddush. We immediately provoke questions by doing strange things. We immediately take care of the Sheino Yodei Lishol type by saying, in the vernacular, a quick version of the story. Sort of. Shibol Elak, it talks about how a halachmanya fulfills the minimal requirements of Haggadah. We then take the curious child's question, the simple question, mazot, what's going on, and give him a simple answer. We then do a little teacher meeting, discussing how we're going to teach, what the model of teaching is, and then the four sons, etc. And then we immediately get ready to tell the real story. How do we get ready to tell the story? By declaring that the story we're going to read is not a one-time story, but a story that is the story of all of Jewish history. And that the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim is built upon Brit Ben Amitarim, which has four components to it. Yadoa teda ki geri yezarcha be'eretz lo lahem. There'll be foreigners in a strange land. Va'avadum v'inu otam rame ochana. They will be worked and oppressed for a long time. I will judge the nation that oppresses them. That is the back side of tefillah, the mirror side of tefillah. And they'll leave with great wealth. That's geula. That's the pattern. And then we say that brit has stood for us throughout the generations. The reason we're here today, able to celebrate, is because that brit is in every part of Jewish history, in every epoch of Jewish history, that brit is being played out. Good discussion to have is, where are we along that cycle today? That's a good discussion to have. And then we tell the story. We start with Lavan to show that it predates Yitzhak Mitzrayim. It's not only about Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And then we use Yitzhak Mitzrayim as the example. And from that example, expand out. When we finish that drasha, we then borrow these statements of Chazal and this beautiful poem of Dayenu to leapfrog our way from Mitzrayim to Yam Suf all the way to Eretz Yisrael. And then we turn around and explain the symbols at the table and do exactly what it is that we really came together for, which is to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the redemption that we're celebrating today, not as people who are the descendants of people who came out of a foreign country a long time ago, but as people who have just now come out. And in a sense, by making the past contemporary with the present is then able to dovetail back into the past, and it becomes an evening where all of Jewish history really combines together into a fascinating time warp, which allows us to celebrate properly. Hopefully this will give a little bit more light and a little bit more sense of purpose to what we're doing at the Seder, and we should all be matzliach to be mekayim fully b'chol dor v'ador chayav adam lerot et atzmo kehili yatza, like the Rambam says, ata mimitzrayim, as if we have just come out of Mitzrayim, and we should indeed realize the final step of the Brit Ben Amitarim, v'acharechen yitzu b'rchush gadol, fully and completely and speedily. Chag kasher v'sameach to everyone.